Nice to have you back before the court.
Good to be here again. May it please the court. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
2 minutes. You have it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Ritter, can I come up to that now?
Yes, Your Honor.
Without saying whose marijuana was in the bag, do you dispute the finding that its packaging and amount was sufficient to show that whosoever it was intended for distribution?
I do. Yes, the packaging, the amount was high. I mean, it was approximately 3 ounces of marijuana, and the testimony from the police officer who qualified as an expert witness was that he said it was a large amount for what he generally sees in that area.
Well, it was also individually packaged, was it?
It was individually three separate. There was one baggie that was discarded from the window,
yeah.
And then there were three individual packages, each having approximately an ounce of marijuana. So
and
that's
is your position that evidence is insufficient to establish whosoever it was intended for distribution?
Yes, Judge. The Askew case says that there's no magic line. I know the statutory amount certainly was exceeded by that amount, but the expert witness also gave a little bit because he acknowledged that, I think the term was exactly, said it's not a large amount of marijuana. It's
that
not
is the question. The question is, when he testified, hey, this is for distribution, hitting up.
He did. He says that, well, it's certainly consistent with an amount that would be consistent with an intent to distribute. But again, we don't know to attribute any individual amount of that to this defendant or the other individual.
Trying to pin down.
And I'm trying to resist being pinned down.
but the only evidence in this case is that the marijuana that came out the window was intended for distribution.
That evidence, based on the amount, that is, and the packaging as it was. I mean, we have to remember there was no other tools of the drug trade found in the vehicle. There were no weight scales, there were no firearms, there were no pages, there was no evidence of any impending transactions. There was also no other drug dealing paraphernalia. For instance, the packaging as it was, there was no other baggie. So if this was intended to be broken down, there was nothing to break it down and put it into, at least not in that vehicle, at least not that was found in that vehicle.
So you said we should discard the expert's testimony as inadequate.
It is certainly a factor that can be considered, but I think that the circumstantial weight has to show it has to go beyond speculation or surmise that the specific intent had been formed on this defendant's behalf to distribute. And I think the amount...
Set that aside. I said, not whose it is.
The amount is something that is indicative of distribution, but I don't necessarily think it's compelling or conclusive given this amount. It's an amount above the statutory threshold. It's somewhat high for personal use, but we had the particulars in this case that this was the beginning of the college semester. The two individuals had been traveling from Washington, D.C., their hometown, where it might be more readily available to them. They might have knowledge of the street and so on. It might be a more comfortable environment to purchase a larger quantity of marijuana than they might otherwise.
But, it might have been, but... Your client says, I don't know anything about it.
True. And the judge, too, to back up to your point again about what about the amount here, I mean, the judge actually said himself, you know, this is an amount that may have been for personal use, and at least in this defendant's mind, but he made that point. But he says he didn't possess it anyway. And then he kind of leapt to, we're going to convict him of the greatest crime that he was accused of, which was the possession with intent to distribute. Which we faulted that logic.
Thank you. Can I ask you a little bit of follow-up on Judge Haley's questions? And there was over $2,000 of cash found on him as well. I know he said that $1,400 or so of that was his mother gave him to pay his rent. He's coming back to college. But you've got no drug paraphernalia found in the car. That could go against possession for use and toward possession with intent to distribute. there's no smell or sign of marijuana in the car being smoked or used while they were traveling from Washington to the Colonial Heights, Petersburg area. And then you've got the three bags
contained within the larger...
The larger bag.
Right.
And then they take off after the officer tased the driver. Now, of course, your client's the passenger, not the driver.
Thank you.
But all of a sudden, the officer sees this bag come flying out of the passenger window.
Right.
Presumably, if it's thrown, if it comes out of the passenger window while the tased individual is fleeing the officers, and they're, you know, eluding the officers by speeding down the road, why couldn't a rational fact finder look at that and say, oh, well, it came out of the passenger window. He certainly is aware of what's going on there, and the way it's distributed and the amount of marijuana is enough for a rational fact finder to conclude that there was an intent.
There are quite a few things there. First off, with the amount of money, I would argue that both some of the individual facts of this case as well as the case law would help Mr. Lewis in this regard. It was the Rice case that's quoted in the brief, which indicates that although cash can be a suspicious circumstance, again, it's not sufficient to convict someone for intent to distribute when the evidence doesn't rise beyond speculation or surmise. Secondly, in this case...
People can carry lots of cash with them and be perfectly legal in every way, and every right to.
Exactly. And we think this was plausibly explained in this case. The defendant is coming...
Isn't that the hook? The best case, I think, that supports your position is the Service case. But Service specifically said that a large amount of marijuana and unexplained cash can provide a defense to possession with intent to distribute. If we were to take Service a step further and say the large amount of marijuana, which we can, you know, argue about one way or the other, and the unexplained amount of cash, you said, well, he did explain it, but was the fact finder required to accept that explanation?
Well, in the absence of any other evidence, that was the evidence in the case.
Then you talk about the flight issues and all of that, and the fact that, as was pointed out, the marijuana came out the side of the car that theoretically or he was sitting in.
I would submit to address that point that was raised by Judge Beals is that it could have just as easily been discarded by the driver. I mean, it's just a matter of putting down the window and discarding it with his right hand, throwing it out that side of the car. And there may have been some reason to do that. I don't know, that's not in the record, but it may have been a design to get it off of the road as opposed to the middle of the road.
Well,
and so the driver could have easily discarded it.
The driver said he didn't know who threw it out the window.
He did.
Sure.
Interestingly. But the driver also said, well, in that event, you know, that it does leave that possibility. Did this defendant take over momentary control and discard it at the behest of the driver, but without the knowledge of how much it was, how it was packaged, and what that person who claimed...
But the driver said he didn't know who threw it out to him. Either he did... Well, you're playing.
Which leaves us back in that equipoise, is that it could have been one or the other. The defendant said it wasn't me. He said it was the driver who, incidentally, claimed that the marijuana was entirely his. And even if you leave aside his words...
maybe correct me if I'm wrong. But I thought that the driver said that he didn't know there was even any marijuana in the car.
At trial, the driver testified that the marijuana was his and solely his. And even if you
disagree, he was convicted.
Correct. After he pled guilty and accepted the responsibility for that. I believe he pled guilty to possession with intent to distribute.
I'm not guilty to possession only.
To possession only.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he...
Well, and I'm wondering, why didn't your client's mom testify?
I don't know. It's not an answer that I'm aware of. I wasn't trial counsel, and I'm not aware of...
I should say, Mr. Ritter, this court feels a great deal of sympathy for folks who end up here who were not trial counsel.
Well, I appreciate
and
that.
Trying to
I try to do the best I can with what, but it puts me in the position. It's somewhat of a good position, consistent with yours. Is I have to work with the record that I have, and not go beyond what we have. So
that's so often a problem.
I would be willing to surmise, if I may, that the mother would have given positive testimony for her son, but I don't know how much credit that would have brought to the case.
Like my mother, if I had been caught with marijuana, my mother would not be coming to court and back me up.
Very true, very true.
Well,
there
are. Did say that
you had a good mother.
He didn't believe anything Barr said. He made that,
He did. He said, I don't know whether it was because he was taking him on because he seemingly conveniently had memory lapses related to this concussion he suffered. Or whether he just didn't believe him.
That it rejected Barr's testimony in its entirety.
But you can't dispute the behavior that Barr existed, because Barr is the one who, when they're pulled over at the vehicle stop, hits the gas. And so we know he has some consciousness of guilt, or something has gone wrong with him, because he's the one that does that, apparently over the protest of the defendant. And so, why couldn't what
where
we have?
See that it was probably the protest of the defendant.
That may have come from Barr. The court may be right on that. It may have come from both the defendant and Barr. And I guess there's no obligation to believe that. But the testimony that I recall from the record was, Mr. Lewis says, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And he's taking off, and the police are in pursuit. So we have very incriminating behavior on the part of Barr, even if you have some doubts about his statement when he says, yes, this is mine and all mine. And then what do we have against this defendant? And again, to focus on, and we have Cash, which is explained by, it's the beginning of the semester. He's indicated a good portion of that is for the rent money, $1,400. That would leave actually less than $700. We have the case law that suggests it's the unexplained existence of cash is the problem. We have the case law that says it, that counsel's caution, I think, about concluding anything simply from an amount of cash. After all, someone could have the intent to purchase marijuana as well as the intent to distribute, or those being the profit of recent sales.
I think they've already done that.
So we really, we've got cash that can be suspicious, but we have a defendant whose ties to this marijuana off the bat are tenuous, because the court is well aware the case law is legion of cases where...
We have to look at this under the totality of the circumstances, right?
Not yes.
Each cash or the bag coming out of the passenger's window. And the standard of review is a rational fact-finder standard of review, right? So why couldn't a rational fact-finder, particularly even if he's aghast that Mr. Barr takes off after he's tased and driving down the road really fast, why couldn't a rational fact-finder conclude with that bag coming out of the passenger window that your client not only helped throw it out, but had a reason for doing so that involved intent to distribute?
Well, I think that what the evidence fails to exclude is the idea that Mr. Lewis possessed, if he possessed marijuana, that it was with the intent for personal use. And I don't think that the court really analyzed, I mean, by taking that all or nothing approach.
Going to your rebuttal, so I don't mean to pause that, but finish your response.
Well, again, I think it left untouched. And I don't mind going into the rebuttal, and I appreciate the questions that the court has. Really all we have is that we have the presence of cash, but it's explained. We have a tenuous link to marijuana, which is claimed by another individual. We really don't know who ejected the marijuana. And even if we take that assumption that it was this defendant, again, that doesn't impart to him the knowledge of what was going to be done with that marijuana if it was bars. And I would point to the Dutton decision that was cited in the brief, where you have an individual that was a driver of a vehicle. There's marijuana. The court found it had been packaged for distribution, but nonetheless could not find that the amount traceable to that individual defendant, Dutton, was constituted sufficient proof of his intent to distribute, and it reversed that conviction. So I'd ask the court to do the same thing here. I see I have 20 seconds left.
I'll give you at least a minute.
Thank you.
We asked a lot of questions. Ms. Tyson.
Good morning. May it please the court. With regard to, and I think counsel mentioned just briefly, the all or nothing, I think it's only fair that the trial judge asked defense counsel, is your position that this is an all or nothing? And the defense counsel said, yes, that is our position, Appendix 75 through 76. And then the court, as fact finder in this case, made a determination based on the evidence that was presented that the evidence was sufficient to prove possession with intent to distribute.
I would think that you would disagree that this case was not an all or nothing case. Theoretically, a fact finder could have found the appellant guilty of simple possession, but not possession with intent to distribute, because there are other factors and circumstances necessary to get to the intent factor.
Well, I will say that the prosecutor, in closing argument, urged the court to convict of possession with intent to distribute because the evidence was sufficient, but said to the court that if the court were inclined not to find intent to distribute, the prosecutor asked that he convict of simple possession. I think it is very important in this case to get back to the standard of review of whether the trial court as fact finder was plainly wrong or without evidence to support the decision that the court made. And when the evidence and the inferences are viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth because the Commonwealth prevailed below, the court was not plainly wrong. I think when we look at the case law with regard to the factors that we look at, there's not a requirement that every single factor be there, quantity, money, scales, and so forth.
But you do agree that the circumstantial evidence, and that's what we're always talking about in constructive cases, has to be significant enough to overcome the standards of beyond reasonable doubt.
Yes, it does. And once the fact finder makes that determination, and then this court looks to see, could a rational fact finder have made that determination? And in this case, that certainly is true. The court is looking in this case only at the intent to distribute question. That was the one that was granted. But
in this case, I know I ask tough questions, that's because you do such a good job answering, so I'm going to give you this factual scenario. Suppose in this case we strip out the cash, all right? Is there enough for a conviction?
I think that a rational fact finder could find it under these circumstances. Without the cash, obviously we're in a lighter
yeah,
spot.
Yeah,
but we still have.
There's got to be in these cases, and it's always difficult in circumstantial cases to come up with bright line tests
right,
and all that.
Right.
But you know, I think that there has to be some theoretical threshold that we need to get over, and I'm trying to figure out from my perspective where that threshold is.
And here's what we would have. Without the $2,090, what we would have is we have no means of ingesting marijuana. I think counsel cited the Dutton case, and if I remember correctly, that is one where there were people in a car, but there were smoking devices. There's nothing in this car that would indicate that anytime soon either of these people were going to be using that drug. We do have a quantity that is significant, and we have the expert testimony that in this area, that is a significant more than one would ordinarily possess for his use.
And a fact finder could bring his or her own experience and know that drug distributors don't use their own product.
Well, that would be a helpful thing for the Commonwealth in this instance, because there aren't any ingesting devices. It is packaged, broken up into roughly 1 ounce packages, which is a nice saleable amount to have a sale. And then it is discarded. The marijuana is worth 900 to 1,050. Those are the numbers that came out at trial. That's a significant, significantly valuable item that's tossed out of the car because
it's illegal.
It was up. Yeah, the police were there, and there it is. So I'm pleased that I'm able to say that there was the $2,090, but given these others, a rational fact finder could determine that this was possession with intent to distribute.
Do you think it's significant that the judge rejected the explanation of where the cash came from? Because without that, we would be closer to service.
We would be closer, and And I'm not, you know, the judge did spoke a great deal. There were, it's like five pages, 80 to 85. The judge made his findings, and I don't remember if it was here that he said even if $14 was for the rent, well, that still leaves us with quite a bit, and we still have the $900 to $1,050 worth of the product. So it is also significant that the cash was 62 $20 bills, $750 bills, $500 bills.
That comes out of the ATM machine.
Well, that's the 20s do. I don't know about the others, but this was not consistent with personal use, and that's the expert's testimony. Of course, under Lamera, he didn't say this was consistent with distribution. He testified this was inconsistent with personal use, and the trial judge did reject both Barr's testimony because in fact, the trial judge sort of gave him the benefit of the doubt occasionally and said, you know, you had this concussion and so forth, and you don't seem to remember some things. In fact, he didn't remember who threw the bag out, and he also didn't remember how he testified at his own court proceeding. And the prosecutor asked him, weren't you convicted of possession with intent to distribute? He said yes, and if the online system is to be believed, that he was convicted of that greater charge.
I'm wrong. Was Barr convicted of possession with intent to distribute?
I believe so. I believe that he was. It's inconsistent in the record.
He pled to possession.
It is inconsistent in the one part of the case. It's one way, and on cross-examination by the prosecutor, she says, "Weren't you convicted of felony allude and felony possession with intent?" And he says, "Yes." So it is inconsistent in the record as far as what he was convicted of. But the trial judge rejected Mr. Lewis's testimony and said he was lying. He rejected that testimony. And as the fact finder, he had the right to make that credibility determination, and he did. He did not believe. So what we have is the instance of the traffic stop. The drugs are discarded. After the lights are turned off and they're eluding and going 50 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone, before they crash, there's no evidence that there are scales or any other distribution items. I will also note that the car caught on fire, and so there was not an opportunity to do a complete search in any event. There was a large amount of cash of over $2,000. We have the expert's testimony. And so when we look at the factors that are repeated in many cases that this court has decided, we see that many of them are here. Every single one of them, no. But we have a lack of ingesting devices as well as these others. We have testimony that has been rejected by the fact finder, and a fact finder who explains his reasoning. And I will agree that at one point the judge makes the comment, it may have been for personal use and in the defendant's mind, but he denies any possession anyway. I think this is simply a single statement in five pages of commentary by the trial court. The trial court undoubtedly determined and said that he found that this evidence was sufficient to prove the intent to distribute, and in fact the lesser included offense did not was not viable based on the evidence and the argument that was presented. The trial court in this case was not plainly wrong. There was evidence to support the decision that the trial court made, and so I'm happy to answer any other questions, but would urge this court to affirm the judgment.
Any other questions for Ms. Tyson?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tyson. Mr. Ritter, you have your well time. I'm going to give you, because we have a lot of questions, I'm going to give you a minute and a half rather than 18 seconds.
Thank you, Judge. I very much appreciate that. I want to counter something that's made it through the suggestion that there were no smoking devices in the car. And there was some indication of that. However, there was a filter cigar that was found, and in fact that Barr was attempting to show the officer was tobacco, and there were some allegations of blunts that were supposedly in the ashtray. So a cigar can be used for a marijuana smoking device. So there may not have been specifically a bowl or a roach clip or anything like that, but that's very commonly done, and it's very well known on the street that can be done. So the idea that there was no smoking devices, I don't believe should get the Commonwealth anywhere.
What is your view on the fact that the officer testified as the immense smell of raw marijuana, not smoke, but raw marijuana, but your client said he didn't know about any marijuana in the car at all.
Right.
How does that reflect on his credibility?
Well, it doesn't reflect favorably on that. So obviously the court made the conclusion that that he was lying because that the smell was overwhelming. But where does that get you? I mean, the court basically said, Barr is lying, you're lying because I know you could smell the marijuana, therefore we're over, you're guilty. And that's the leap in logic that I don't approve of. The knowledge of marijuana shows that he knew marijuana was in the car. It doesn't show that he knew how much, how it was packaged, or that he had any intent to distribute it. He could have had, he could lie to conceal his guilt of simple possession. He could lie to conceal or to try to cover for his buddy or his cousin. There are a variety of explanations. You can't simply leap to the worst one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ritter. See if either Mr. Maloney or Mr. Morrissey are outside. If either of those gentlemen, that is the next matter to be argued. We're running a few minutes ahead, so. All right, Mr. Maloney. Mr. Maloney.
Yes, sir.
All right. Yeah, great.
Morrissey was the other name.
Yeah, the other name. We're set. Mr. Maloney is arguing this case.
Yes, right? I am, Judge.
All right. Take your time.
Okay.
We're running a little bit ahead of schedule, but we will recounsel, and then we will take up your petition, Rebus versus Commonwealth.